Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So the residents of Skidmore, Missouri, who had gathered near the D&G Tavern on a July morning, could sense the change in atmosphere. Something new had replaced the fear that had previously hung over the town's 440 citizens. A sense of obligation, as well as an anger, a profound, long-simmering anger, were both present. Men had gathered near trucks containing weapons and shotguns. From nearby windows, bank staff and grocery clerks observed. Dust hung in the air above the town's little-constructed main road, adding to the sense of a Wild West showdown that day in 1981. Ken Rex McElroy, 47, a hefty man with a ragged pair of sideburns and a piercing glare, strolled out of the tavern door. He said nothing to the 30-odd neighbours who stood nearby or observed from a petrol station just up the hill as he walked out of the tavern and into his Chevy Silverado's driver's side door. Trina, his wife, went into the passenger seat. Trina looked around and then behind them. She was the first to see the rifle as one of the gathered men hoisted it to shoulder level. She heard the rear window of the Silverado shatter and saw her husband slump over the steering wheel. In seconds, Ken McElroy would be dead, and the people of Skidmore, who had seen everything, would claim to have seen absolutely nothing at all. Join me and the Sinister Sisters, Cadence and Alexa, as we discuss the case of Ken McElroy. So hello, my fellow weirdos. How is everybody today? I hope everyone is all fan-dabby-dozy and having an amazing week. This week, we have an unsolved murder case, and it's a doozy. Everyone's going to love Mr. Ken McElroy because he's just an absolute joy. And to help me cover this unsolved murder case, we have two very, very special guests from a podcast that is very dear to me. Absolutely love it. It is Cadence and Alexa from the Something Sinister podcast. Hello, hello, hello.
And we're based out of Missouri. So, and you're based out of Missouri. You know, Ken's a great guy of ours, a great friend of ours. I can't
wait to talk about the family, you know, and he is not the Ken doll. Just FYI.
Just to be clear, not to be confused. No, we're so excited. Especially after that intro. Like, I cannot wait to hear this.
I know. I'm stoked.
I'm glad that you guys can come on. This has been in the process for a while, hasn't it? We were talking about it. It's been months.
Yes.
But time differences have got in the way, and my schedule's got in the way, and yeah, it's been. Mm-hmm. But we finally got it. We finally got it pinned down.
Finally.
Pinned down.
Yes.
So, ladies, for anyone who hasn't listened to your podcast, and like I talk about you guys a lot on here, so if nobody's listened, I'm like, what is going on? Sort out your life decisions. What is happening? Please give the listeners a little bit of information about your podcast, where they can find it, where they can follow you on social medias, and all of that good stuff.
Yeah. Do you want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
So we are a true crime podcast, Something Sinister. We are not historians, just FYI, or biologists, or scientists, or criminologists. We love talking all things true crime. Sometimes we do research the night before or the day of for this one. But you know what? We research, we have fun, and our stories are always right. I mean, we might make up words here and there, but we love to keep it positive. We love to throw the comedy aspect into it, as well as get drunk.
Yes. So we recorded with Dom earlier today. We always incorporate a small drinking game, our something spike. So we've already had our tequila for the morning. And
morning,
we also kind of do some like astrology, zodiac stuff. Yep. We try to like be a little different. So we have fun with it.
We do. Ooh, so you can find us on all podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Google, Amazon. You can also find us on YouTube. We do have videos. So we record every one of our sessions plus more on YouTube. So subscribe, download, share, rate, review, all the fun things.
I always just direct people to somethingsinisterpodcast.com.
Yes.
That way you can find all our links, social media, merch, blah, all that fun stuff.
Yes, that is the best way. But thank you for that, guys. As I said, if you haven't listened to Cadence and Alexa, please do. They have an amazing podcast. It is one of my daily listens. So
oh, I love that.
You guys.
Thank you.
You guys are smashing.
You were like one of the first people to like really reach out and be like, oh my gosh, like huge supporter. Let's like do like, and you started pretty close to the same time we did, right?
Yeah. So I started mine in October. I think it was like late October, something.
Yeah.
Yeah. We released ours on Halloween.
Yeah.
Oh,
Halloween,
really?
October 31st last year. So
I think the 22nd of October was when I did my first.
Gotcha.
So yeah. Literally like just over a week, just over a week before. Oh, wow. That's mad. I didn't realize
that.
It was fate. Definitely. So how do you know anything about this at all?
No.
Yes.
Other than Missouri.
I was going to say, I've heard of Skidmore, but
I'm so glad. I was like,
about it.
I was like, I hope like they don't know like loads of stuff. And I'm just going to be like, a man.
No, I'm pumped.
Good.
I am too.
So yeah, this guy was something else. Like it, vigilante justice. I go back and forth, but this guy probably deserved it. I'm just gonna put it out there. He probably deserved it. So are you ready, ladies, to get
started? We're ready. Let's go.
Let's get spooky.
Wonderful. So Ken Rex McElroy was born in 1934 and was the 15th of 16 children to Tony and Mabel McElroy.
That poor woman.
I'm not even
going to
say it.
Okay.
15.
Wow.
Oh, my God. That sounds...
Can you imagine the noise of 16 children in your house?
The noise, the food consumption,
the vagina.
What it did, I mean, that, do you reckon, body.
Do you reckon when it got to, like, child 13, he just sort of slipped out? Like, he just... You know,
yeah, they were just walking. They were just out. They're like, I'm here, out.
Twirling the umbilical cord as he comes.
Number 14's here, working the umbilical cord. Gross.
So Tony and Mabel were a poor migrant-tending farming couple who had traveled between Kansas and the Ozarks before settling outside of Skidmore. So Ken dropped out of eighth grade at the age of 15 and immediately gained reputation as a cattle rustler, small-time criminal, and womanizer in the area. We're off to a good start.
Yeah,
he sounds like a great guy.
We're off to a really, really good start.
Yeah.
And it gets so much better from here. So much better. So McElroy was suspected of stealing grain, gasoline, alcohol, antiques, and livestock for more than two decades, but
Why not?
Right. But
2 decades. Jeez.
2 decades. And what's even more like mad than this, he escaped. So guess how many times he escaped conviction when charges were brought against him?
No, escaped.
Oh, escaped. I thought you said guess how many times.
She's like,
convicted.
Zero.
No. Oh, he probably escaped every single time.
He escaped conviction 21 times.
Oh, how?
Which is insane.
What in the world?
He's like, I did not do this. I'm like, okay, yeah. See you next time.
Now, like every night, just don't be doing this again, Ken. Oh, no, it's fine. Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah. Fine.
Yeah.
Next week, yeah. The judge is just like, yeah. Ken, we talked about this. This is the 19th time you're here. Like, yeah. Come on.
What is going on? I know, judge. I know. I fucked up. I won't do it again. You got my word. One more chance.
That's it. Oh, dear. So one of the reasons why he escaped conviction 21 times is because often witnesses refuse to testify because he would allegedly intimidate them by following them or parking outside their homes and just like sitting there watching them. Like he would literally sit outside people's homes for hours and just watch them from his car.
Oh my God, what a piece of shit. Yeah.
Like, what an absolute... Yeah, he is something else.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a cartoon clip where it's like the judge is like, is it this man? And they look over and he's like, no. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So McElroy excelled at slipping out of trouble, as we just mentioned. This is because he had the money to employ a defense attorney called Richard McFadden. And this defense attorney was rumored to represent the mafia or be used by the mafia.
Sounds like a good guy.
So yeah. He's a pretty, like, if he, that might explain why he was very good at getting off convictions.
Oh, truly.
If you've got like a mafia lawyer,
yes.
Like, I mean, you're not going anywhere, are you? Let's be honest.
Right.
Like, you're
right. Yeah.
Never getting anything. So McFadden, as said, a rumored mafia defense attorney would ensure he was somewhere else other than the site of the crime. So he would always make sure that Ken conveniently wasn't around or he was somewhere
else. He had
an
alibi.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So to also add to how good of a guy McElroy was, not only did Richard McFadden represent him, he also represented his hunting dog friends.
Mm. Oh, hunting dog friends, not the hunting dog.
No,
okay,
no.
I was like, wait, dogs can have lawyers? What did the dog do?
Can you imagine dogs having lawyers?
Oh God.
So just like, oh, so honey, I'm off to my case.
Yeah.
My first case today. Oh, really? Like, who represent? Oh, yeah, I'm representing, like, Brian, the Labrador. I think we're going to be all right.
Mr. Pickles again. Yeah. He ate too many pickles.
Yeah. Yeah, he killed his neighbor's cat. He's on trial for convicted murder. So it's going to be real tough one day.
So McFadden would utilize every legal technique at his disposal to have hearings postponed or delayed, believing that the longer the case against McElroy went to trial, the colder the case would get. They might have been able to hold out for a month or two, his, you know, the people that would be testifying against him. But many of them would recant their comments after being harassed by McElroy for long periods of time, which would mean that McElroy would repeatedly walk away from significant charges with nothing more than a dent in his wallet.
Oh, I hate that.
And that's
that.
It. And a slap on the wrist, yeah. Just for good measure.
Wow. I hate it.
Like, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, he obviously knew his shit.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing.
But yeah, which is obviously unfortunate for the town of Skidmore, as we will get into, mm-hmm. because there are some things in here that will make you, like, just be like, what the fuck is this guy, man? So before I get into Ken's love life, fair warning that this is going to be quite triggering to some people, to a lot of people, pretty much. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. This guy is actually vile in regards to his love life. So, yeah, get ready. So McElroy fathered over 10 children with three different women, which probably isn't the greatest of starts, I'm not going to lie. And it does only get worse.
No.
10 children with three different women. Fucking hell.
No.
Trina McLeod would be his third and final wife. I use that term loosely as the marriages would often overlap with each other.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, indeed.
What a felony too.
Well, at that time, polygamy was still legal. Well, depending. I don't know. What year is this?
This was
probably 70s? Like in the 60s. Okay, 70s? So polygamy wasn't legal. So I don't know how.
This was 70s. Wow, weird. So if that wasn't a crime, this certainly is. McElroy met Trina when she was 12 years old. while Ken himself was over 20 years her senior.
Oh.
Yeah, because you said he was born in
34.
Oh my gosh.
Ew.
That's sick.
McElroy's method of wooing Trina, I shouldn't laugh because it's grim, but it's also quite just mind-boggling. McElroy's method of wooing Trina, who again was a child, she was 12, was to follow her school bus and repeatedly honk and yell until the driver pulled over and allowed Ken to abscond with her.
Oh my God. Shame on that person.
Yeah.
That is like awful. Hey, this guy is harassing us. You know what we should do? We should pull over and let him on. See what he wants.
It's insane, isn't it? And yeah, it's kind of hard to avoid stranger danger when the school bus driver can simply be pressured into being an accessory to kidnapping.
Yeah, it is right.
Madness. So if that wasn't good enough, this next bit is a doozy. Trina would be raped on numerous occasions, which resulted in her becoming pregnant at 14 years old, after which she would drop out of school and went to live with McElroy and his wife, Alice. Alice was still very much in the picture while this was happening, by the way.
Oh, my God.
So she now.
Yeah.
So she's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to make things even better, to avoid charges of statutory rape, Ken would divorce Alice and marry Trina.
Of course.
Where are Trina's parents?
Yeah, no kidding. They're just like, oh, okay, whatever.
It's like this whole section is just, it's like, you would think it's a movie because you're like, that this doesn't happen in real life. Like, this is just all that's made up. It's insane.
That's so sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this guy is just an absolute slime ball. So a little over 2 weeks after giving birth, both Trina and Alice attempted to flee to Trina's mother and stepfather's house. McElroy, as we will find out a little bit later, was not one to take rejection particularly well, would soon find them after this and would bring them back. He then returned to the house of the mother and stepfather while they were away, set it on fire. And do you know what else he did, which was the kicker? He also shot their family.
I knew it was gonna be something with
I
the dog
too.
Oh my God,
I hate this guy.
So wait, did the people in the house die?
No, they weren't there.
Oh, they weren't there.
They weren't home at the time.
Oh, my.
But like that's a perfectly normal reaction, isn't it? Like perfectly
normal. Yeah, I just
normal.
Did that too.
Perfectly, well, you know,
I'm
just
not gonna say that. Yes, totally normal, justified.
Like, totally normal. totally justified. Why wouldn't you set someone's house on fire and shoot their dog in the face? I want to add.
So sad.
Yeah. What the fuck, Ken? What the fuck?
You need that on a t-shirt. What the fuck, Ken?
Oh, that's good. Should we put some merch out? Just what the fuck, Ken, merch. On like everything. And then we can split the profits. So McElroy was charged with arson, assault, and statutory rape in June 1973. He was taken into custody, detained, and arraigned before being released on a $2,500 bond. Trina and her baby were put into the care of a Maryville, Missouri foster family. And this is where you will see the pattern of what Ken would do every single time he was arrested. So in this case, what he did, he sat outside the foster family's home for hours at a time, just staring at it. He then told the foster family that he would trade girl for girl in order to get his child because he knew where the foster family's biological daughter went to school and which bus route she took.
What a psycho.
One, I can't even look at a TV for 2 hours. Can you imagine just staring at someone's house for 2 fucking hours?
No.
I'd get so bored.
It's insane. Like, it's an absolutely insane. My attention span, right? My attention span would not allow me to do that. I'll get bored after like 15 minutes. I'll just be like, I'm going.
Yeah.
And
this whole thing with the school bus and stalking, like that is like, that's like beyond stalking.
Yeah.
That is total, complete obsession. It consumes everything
like
about
a mental illness.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like what in the world?
Gross.
He's a gem, isn't he? Absolute gem.
Good old Missouri.
Good old Ken from Skidmore.
And from Missouri.
From Missouri, indeed. So Trina claimed in a 1981 People magazine interview that the house fire was caused by defective wiring. Later interviews with Alice and Trina revealed that they downplayed their abuse and even claimed McElroy was kind to them. Alice told People magazine shortly after her death in 1981, Ken was totally different from the way they are saying he was now. Oh, he was wild, but he wasn't guilty of all those things they say. He was honest and generous. I never knew him to steal anything, ever.
You lying bitch.
Yeah, she's fucking lying.
Like, what and why? Like, at that point, why lie?
Yeah, like, what the fuck? You've already said that he's a piece of shit, and now you're going to come back and say, oh, no, he was such a good man.
Yeah, like, she's either lying, or those Stockholm Syndrome vibes are strong.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Are, like, so
good
strong.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good old.
Either that or Ken, or Ken's just a manipulative sack of shit, which he is.
Yeah,
I think that's a given. Jeez. That's an absolute given. So Romaine Henry, who was a Skidmore farmer, claimed McElroy shot him twice with a shotgun when he challenged him for firing guns on his property. So Henry was like, Ken, don't shoot guns on my property. And then Ken shot him twice.
He's like, I didn't. Pow, pow.
Oh, my God.
Although he's probably not holding a pistol to the side.
Yeah, like that.
Just side cocking a
shotgun. Can you imagine? That'd be so hard. You'd be like, shh, shh. Yeah, that's probably not how you play up your innocence. I didn't do it. Don't tell me what to do. Yeah. Bang, bang.
Bang, bang. You're done.
Yeah. It's since I love that it was Henry's property as well.
Yeah, like bye. Get
what the hell?
And I will tell you this.
Yeah,
I don't know what farmland is like over there in England, but farmers in the Midwest do not fuck around. I've had people pull guns on me just for pulling in the wrong driveway so I could like turn around.
Really?
Yeah. Like if you get deep into the farms here, these
especially
people don't
Skidmore.
Like to be messed with. So the fact that he had the balls to go and shoot guns on the property, get called out for it, and then continue to shoot guns. Like I'm surprised that other farmer didn't just right there.
Instantly.
Yeah.
Like, no conversation. Yeah.
No. I probably would have, I probably would have just shot him myself. I mean, to be perfectly honest. So like, shoot me twice. I'm going to shoot you three times up the ante. Fucking dickhead.
Yeah, right. So
McElroy faced a charge of assault with the intent to murder. Mm. However, McElroy denied being present at the time because, of course he did. Henry claimed that McElroy also parked outside his house at least 100 times as the case went on without a court date.
What? He's
psycho.
Where? It's like, does he have the same 24 hours in a day that we do? Yeah,
like, where does he have the time to be able to do all of this?
Molly May's like, you're not using your full 24 hours, Ken. Come on.
Yeah. Like,
not using your full 24.
Jeez. That's insane, next level. It?
This is like, it's when I was outlining this, I was like, I've done some, you know, I've covered Bonin and I've covered Kraft and I covered Catherine Knight, who like chopped up her husband and was going to feed him to her kids. Like, but this is just like blowing my mind, I think, more than any other one, just because of the sheer just like ridiculousness of it, I think. I'm just like
the dedication.
Dedication.
And
the obsession, like we said earlier. Crazy.
It's like a movie script. Like it's genuinely like a movie script. Netflix would be all over this.
Right.
Like insane. So two raccoon hunters testified at the trial that they were with McElroy on the day of the shooting, which took place distant from Henry's property. Under interrogation by McElroy's attorney, Richard Jean McFadden, Henry was compelled to disclose in court that he had concealed his own petty criminal past for more than 30 years. So McElroy was found not guilty.
What the fuck? Who are these people?
Whose balls does he have? Right? Hold up.
There's got to be some deep connections there.
Yeah, not mob lawyers.
I was about to say, like, for anyone out there who's being like, I wonder if I committed a crime, who I would get this mob lawyer. Yeah. Like, this is the lawyer that you need. Like,
for sure.
I mean,
get
for
this
sure.
guy.
Like, is he still alive? Like, do you want to rob a bank? Well,
you know, I recently did my taxes on TurboTax, and I was scared of going to prison after every button I click because they're like, if you input the wrong information, it's a felony. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to go to jail. I like probably put the wrong number, click that I had kids or something. And like, this guy's fucking going on a rampage. And they're like, well,
it's all right.
Don't do it again.
It's all right. You should have just called up old Dick McFadden, Cadence, and you would have been fine. You would have been absolutely fine.
With my taxes.
Oh, dear. So Trina went to a grocery store in Skidmore in 1980 with Tonya, who was one of Ken's daughters from a previous marriage. Trina and retailers Ernest Bowenkamp and his wife, Lois, got into a fight over whether Tonya had taken candies without intending to pay for it. So pretty minor. Like, Ken could probably sort that out without, like, blowing his lid. But it's Ken. So he very much did not handle this without blowing his lid. So the misunderstanding escalated into a charge that his daughter was a thief for McElroy. So McElroy misunderstood that, like, you know, his daughter was being called just this massive criminal mastermind thief. So he started following the Bowenkamps around their store and at their house, parking outside for hours at a time. Knowing McElroy's history, the couple was worried that his pestering would escalate into violence. And boy, oh boy, did it turn into violence. So McElroy, so this is fucking insane. I just want to preface this. This is obscene. McElroy approached Bo Bowenkamp in the grocery store's loading area. McElroy raised a shotgun and fired after a brief verbal confrontation. Ken had shot Bo in the neck from point blank range with a shotgun. This would also mark this.
He fucking obliterated his neck.
Yeah. What the fuck?
I tried to go on with that, but like Cadence's reaction killed me.
I'm step-by-step picturing it in my head, and it just is
not a neck anymore.
No, his head just fell off.
So this would obviously mark the second occasion that McElroy had shot someone, because he shot the farmer. So you would think that after getting shot in the neck from point-blank range with a shotgun, Bowenkamp would probably die. The man lived.
Oh my God, that poor guy.
So I just want to say again, Bo got shot in the fucking neck from like point blank, like face to face range with a shotgun, and he fucking lived. Like he lived.
Oh my God, how? That would like obliterate your, that would like shatter everything.
It's, I
have no words.
Yeah. Man's flabbergasted. I genuinely, like, I'm not a religious man at all, but I can believe that there might have been some divine intervention.
That 100%. Can we all just take a moment to go back to the fact that this was over fucking Ken? Yeah.
So following this, McElroy got into his pickup and drove away. Richard Stratton, who was a highway patrol corporal, was alerted to the event and pursued McElroy. McElroy had previous run-ins with this officer, so he knew he would try and get out of the country by taking a detour through neighboring Fillmore. He tracked down and apprehended McElroy, but not before considering the possibility of being shot. And this is because McElroy had previously stated that he was capable of shooting down cops. And there was no reason to mistrust him at the time. There really isn't. Like, he shot two people. I wouldn't mistrust when he's like, yeah, I could shoot a cop. You probably could.
Yeah. I would take everything he says very literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. So McElroy obviously enlisted McFadden to represent him in the subsequent criminal prosecution, as was becoming customary. McFadden requested and was granted a change of venue, this time to Harrison County, and prepared a defense in which Bowenkamp was presented as the aggressor. Okay. Man who got shot in the neck was the
aggressor. Because he said, hey, don't steal candy from me again. Or even worst case scenario, let's say he did get onto her and say, hey, you're a thief. Yeah. Do not come in here and steal my candy. Like, even if he was like aggressive, she fucking stole from him.
Yeah. He didn't do anything to Ken.
No, he didn't.
Jesus.
He didn't do it at all.
He got off. Unbelievable.
So Bowenkamp was presented as the aggressor. And even better than that, McElroy said that the business owner had approached him with a knife and McElroy couldn't avoid defending himself. Oh, that was the reason he shot him, because he apparently approached him with a knife.
He couldn't defend himself, but he could hold a shotgun up to his
straight
neck.
To his neck. Yeah.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
So in the interim, McElroy would stick to his usual strategy of intimidating victims, driving by the Bowenkamp household and making harassing phone calls. Mm. Bowenkamp's wife recalled, "You can't know how intimidating it was after that. Before his trial, he would drive up to our house in his pickup at night and just sit there. Sometimes he would fire his gun. It was frightening." That's some of the most over-the-top Marvel supervillain bullshit I've ever heard in my life.
What the fuck? Right? He's a psycho.
Crazy. And do we know how many kids are living with him at the time?
I couldn't find anything about that. Unfortunately, gosh,
those poor kids.
Yeah, they were probably terrified.
I mean, at least one, because she's a fucking thief. But
yeah, you know, if you get in trouble, you know, dad's not gonna come and spank you. He's just gonna start shooting his gun.
He's not gonna come and, like, you know, discipline you. He's just gonna come and, like, shoot someone.
Yeah. What the hell?
Jesus. Lucky girl. So McElroy was able to postpone the trial for almost 5 months until June 25th, 1981, thanks to legal maneuvering. During this time, the acting prosecuting attorney quit and was replaced by David Baird, who was a young new prosecutor. Some people believe that McElroy forced the prior prosecutor to resign. I can believe that.
I would believe that.
I can buy that. Very much.
He was probably stalking him and shooting his gun in the air too at his house.
I would just honestly leave this entire area. I'm a neighbor, grocery store. I'd be like, I'm out.
Yeah.
This place, y'all are
Everyone just leave the town at this point. Like, Skidmore can just,
in town,
you know, just go and die. So even though the new prosecutor, David Baird, was just 3 years out of law school, he accomplished something that no previous prosecutor in McElroy's criminal history had been able to do. He found him guilty of a crime.
Good.
What crime?
First time. Well done, David. So, what crime? This is going to really piss you off.
Good.
Piss me
off. Lifting. Candy.
So he was slap wrist. Don't shoplift candy. So he was found guilty of a crime for the first time, and Ken, preface this, he shot someone in the neck with a shotgun from point blank range. He was charged with second degree assault and sentenced to 2 years.
Assault? How do you assault someone by shooting them in their throat?
Hey, at least it's better than nothing. Also, fun fact, this Mr. David Baird is still an attorney.
Oh.
Today.
Where is he located?
Maryville, so outside of St. Louis, which makes sense because good morning.
So this is like 3.5 hours away from where we are.
Oh, yeah. No way. Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Or where he is, at least. So,
well, yeah, even
shout out David.
Well done, David. You got him charged on something. Granted.
Hey, at least he did something.
Like, yeah, at least he got something. But it's just the fact that, like, he genuinely tried to kill someone and was charged with second degree assault.
Assault. Wow. Like,
what?
Wow.
It's crazy.
I can't. So those in Skidmore who rejoiced at the news that McElroy had finally been convicted of something found their joy short-lived. This is because McElroy was released on a $40,000 bond awaiting appeal of his conviction.
Of course, not surprised. That is just disgusting.
Of course. Of course. And if that wasn't fucking infuriating enough, McElroy said at the trial, and I quote, "The jury convicted me and they gave me 2 years, but I'll tell you what, I'll never go to jail. I'll appeal and get off. I've been fighting the law since I was 13 and I'm damn near 50. I've been arrested for over 53 felonies and this is the first one I've ever lost."
What a fucking narcissist.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
He's spitting out facts, but he is still a damn narcissist.
Jeez.
Oh my God.
The bragging and the ego of this fuckhead is actually outstanding.
Yeah. Especially for someone from Missouri. Like, this is a very not typical Midwest attitude, unless I guess you're a felon.
Yeah, unless you're from Skidmore.
Yeah.
So McElroy's presence in town remained ominous, and the sentence had no effect on his actions, as shown by the fact that he flashed a bayoneted gun in the D&G tavern intending to finish the job on Bowenkamp. So such an act was clearly a breach of his bail bond, and eyewitnesses mustered the bravery to testify against him in the hopes ultimately putting him behind bars. However, McElroy's deception caused the hearing to be postponed again. McElroy was in the tavern of the morning of July 10th, 1981, when he should have been in court facing gun charges.
He does what he wants.
Because,
like,
of course.
For every one he does, step yeah, forward, he, there's he does like exactly 5,000 right. steps backwards.
Right.
Yeah. So to the people of Skidmore, McElroy's continued presence was inexplicable. But time and again, the law had failed to protect them from a violent, abusive man who had stolen from them, raped them, terrorized them in their homes, and fired guns at them in the hopes of killing them. There was no predicting what kind of damage he can inflict before he was sent to jail. And of course, that was assuming that he had even wind up in jail in the fucking first place.
Right.
Unbelievable. So town... Yeah, like... yeah. So townspeople met with Sheriff Estes at the Legion Hall in the center of town on July the 10th, 1981, to discuss ways to protect themselves. McElroy and Trina came at the TNG tavern, came to the DNG tavern during the meeting. The men at Legion Hall received word that he was in town as he sat drinking at the bar. So the sheriff advised the assembled group not to confront McElroy directly, but rather to seriously consider organizing a neighborhood watch organization, because that would, that's going to, I don't know how much that would actually help. Would that help?
A neighborhood watch?
Like,
how about this? Body shields. Like, and guns. Everybody yeah. walk around with body shields
and guns.
Yeah.
A neighborhood watch. After what we've heard,
yeah, how about
I don't know,
a collective like neighborhood hide, like everybody yeah, just or like hide.
The army or the yeah. National Guard. I don't know.
Like, so Estes, after telling the group not to confront McElroy directly, mm-hmm. drove his police cruiser out of town, and the citizens made the decision to head to the tavern on a mass. What I love about this is that right after the town meeting, but before he was shot, the sheriff was pretty much like, right, so don't do anything crazy. We need to let the law, you know, we need to let the law take care of him. Don't confront him directly. We'll do a neighborhood watch. So I'm just going to go out of town, but don't do anything crazy.
Right. Like,
don't go and confront him. I'm just going to go out of town for a bit.
But yeah. I won't be here to monitor yeah. you. Yeah. Right? I won't be here to see what you're doing. So be good. This is what you need to be doing.
Yeah. It's just like, it's right. just, it's just like, now I got to go, but no vigilante shit, right? Wink. No vigilante shit. Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
Like 100% the sheriff knew exactly what was going to happen. And he was just like, I'm not going to do sure. anything to stop it. Because he was probably yes. tired of Ken's shit as well, I imagine. So many people walked inside and surrounded McElroy, which was a quiet gesture of community support. McElroy was deafeningly silent. He got out of the building and into his Silverado. Trina, his wife, would later tell detectives she saw a man raise a rifle behind them before the shooting started. A bullet broke McElroy's car window and blasted through him, scattering shards of glass everywhere. One of the men opened the passenger side door and ushered Trina out of the line of fire, and she was led to a nearby bank. The shooting would continue for 20 seconds or so and then stopped. The only remaining noise was the Silverado's rumbling engine.
Oh, wow. My God. Yeah, slow clap. Holy.
20 seconds dead. Is a long time when you're
yeah. when you're getting hammered with
yeah. hell.
20 seconds is a long time.
Oh my God. I'm surprised they let her live, to be honest.
I'm surprised someone came in and got her out of the truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was expecting, like, especially just nobody, just to, like, they both get wow. But no, she got pulled out.
Holy shit.
Like,
crazy.
There are very few times where, like, vigilante justice is probably justified. This is not one of those times. I think this is very much justified because obviously
yeah.
the law wasn't doing anything.
No, no.
So
the cop came back. And, yeah. The cop came back and goes, you guys, what the fuck?
He just comes back and he's like, guys, I told you.
Bill.
Guys.
Jesse. Liz. Wow. Yeah, I would say it's justified not condoning violence or like felonies or murder, but Jesus Christ, like that guy,
they were over it.
Yeah, they were. They were done, very much done. So McElroy, who was 47 years old at the time, remained in the car after being shot twice. He would not have noticed his shooter because the gunfire came from behind him. There were bullet casings from two different firearms discovered, to which the guns have never been discovered. So the bullet casings have been discovered, but the guns have never been discovered. It's also worth noting, this is hilarious, it's also worth noting that not one person called an ambulance. They just went home or went back to their businesses.
Love that. Yeah. even Trina, like, what did she do?
She went to that. She was fine.
She had to have known what was going on. Like, that's one thing. Why
she was kind of like, fucking, like, thank God.
Yeah, probably. Like, I mean,
yeah. She's like, while I'm here, I need to deposit $1,000.
Actually, I need to withdraw everything that's in my account. Yeah.
Do you cash checks here? I just want to make sure. So speaking of Trina, Trina was resolute in her belief that she knew who the killer was from the moment she was brought in for questioning. She identified a man, later identified as Del Clement by People magazine, as the man who had held up the firearm and shot McElroy. So Clement did have a motive. He was a co-owner of the pub where McElroy sat idle, driving away customers, and he was also a victim of one of his cattle robberies. And he was also known to have a very short fuse. So, you know, there's some stuff that could be like, Del's a good sort of candidate for a potential shooter. So Clement, on the other hand, rejected the claim, and no further witnesses came forward.
Good.
Yeah. The DA.
Why is Trina being a snitch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they essentially, like, the town just didn't say a word. And to this day, like, no one knows who did it. Like, they kept their silence and they just never said a word.
They're like, Ken, don't know the name. Yeah. It's not ringing a bell.
Ken? No, don't know a Ken, sorry. So the DA and the coroner's jury ultimately decided not to issue an arrest warrant or prosecute charges on Clement. So residents were approached in a variety of ways by local law enforcement and federal officials in an attempt to inquire information. They made an effort to be pleasant. The law enforcement and federal officials made an effort to be pleasant even. They then took a stronger stance, demanding to know what had occurred. They argued that no one would be able to get away with murder in broad daylight in front of dozens of people. Vehicles from the FBI crawled into town, stopping in front of homes, and agents sat in kitchens attempting to get even the least bit of information from residents.
Why? This dude was a piece of shit. Yeah, let it go.
Chalk it up to a cold case, and
the mafia probably paid off the FBI. They're like, hey, we need to
mafia guys. Now
that, you know, there is the mafia tie, isn't there, with the lawyer. So maybe so nothing they did was successful. The residents of Skidmore had little to say other than that they heard gunshots or dropped to the ground to escape being hit by a bullet. They couldn't tell who began it, if there were many shooters, or if anyone was fleeing the scene. None of it convinced David Baird to bring a case, and Trina's testimony would be worthless if there was no one to back it up. After a year, the FBI announced their investigation would be closing, and then they closed it.
Oh yeah, it's like justice was served.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
I just love how the people in the town, when like the FBI were like, so we need, like, the people in the town were just like, Ken got shot, and you can't find the shooter. Oh damn, that's tough.
Yeah.
Good luck with that though.
Yeah.
Let me know if you find anything out.
They're like, wait, what did Bill say? Because Karen, did she even talk to Karen yet? Because I'm just curious what they just had to say.
They might have been at the bar. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah,
I love it.
Like, have you spoken to Dave? Dave's a bit suspicious. Yeah. Have you spoken to Dave? Yeah. Oh, dear.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Surely someone was like, you do know he shot the general store manager in the neck
and the farmer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Among you know this guy's a piece of shit, right?
Yeah.
Like no one's sad.
Like, yeah. there were the shootings, and then there was him essentially fucking abducting a child and then raping said child and then impregnating said child at 14 and setting someone's house on fire and shooting a dog. Like, there's so
endless hours of stalking.
Yeah.
Endless hours of stalking. Like, wow. Jesus. So McElroy was laid to rest in St. Joseph's Memorial Park Cemetery. Trina McElroy sued the town of Skidmore, County of Nottoway, Sheriff Danny Estes, Steve Peters, who was the mayor of Skidmore, and Del Clement for $5 million in a wrongful death suit on July the 9th, 1984.
Wow. Wait, and she won?
The lawsuit was eventually resolved out of court. Guess how much for? So it was $5 million that she filed for. Guess how much it was resolved for out of
court. I'm gonna guess a mil. That's what I'm gonna say. $1 million.
You are so far off, I'm afraid. So far off. $17,600.
That's all she got. All right.
I'm okay with
that's
that.
All she, that's
I'm
all okay she got. That.
Okay.
That's all
yeah,
she
that's
got.
One person's taxes in a year. Gosh. One farmer's taxes in 6 months. Fuck.
Wow.
Imagine filing a wrongful death suit for $5 million. And all you get 17,000. Is 17,600.
Yeah, if that doesn't speak volume, I'm surprised she got anything. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's insane. So the lawsuit was eventually resolved out of court for, as I said, $17,600, with no one admitting wrongdoing for the stated motive of avoiding expensive legal bills if the litigation went forward. Trina remarried and relocated to Lebanon, Missouri, where she died of cancer on January the 24th, 2012, which was her 55th birthday.
Wow, she was young. But she was also 12 when this
whole thing
piece
started.
Of shit got a hold of her. So,
poor woman.
Wow, yeah, Lebanon isn't that far either. This is all within like a 4-hour circumference of us.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
That's insane. Wow. Wow. I haven't done a case which has like been proper close to me yet. I've done some UK cases, but not near like where I live or where I used to live.
Crazy. I'm gonna ask if I know anyone from Skidmore.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know anyone from Skidmore?
No.
I think I do. I think someone I work with.
Really?
I'm gonna have to ask.
Yeah.
That is nuts.
So that was the story of the still unsolved to this day murder of Ken McElroy. Thoughts, feelings?
Oh my God, that was so good. I can't believe we haven't even heard that.
No.
Like, I've never heard the name.
Ask my mom.
Yeah.
Because I'm like curious.
Wow.
It's insane. Like, I only really heard of it recently, to be fair. I think BuzzFeed's Unsolved did an episode about it. And I was like, that would be a good episode for a podcast, like, or for the podcast.
Absolutely, with the Missouri Sinister Sisters.
Yeah, well, when you did your intro, I was instantly like,
I know, our jaw was like,
wait, what?
So.
It was a really interesting one to read up on. And like I said, sort of vigilantism could be, you could view it as a good thing or a bad thing, but
for sure,
obviously at the end of the day, like, the law wasn't doing anything. He was getting away with everything. So a neighborhood watch wouldn't have done shit, I don't think.
Except get people perfectly killed. Honest,
that wouldn't have done
exactly.
Anything. Yeah, exactly. It would have caused more collateral damage.
Wow.
So desperate times, call for desperate measures. And
for sure.
he needed to be taken out. To be perfectly honest, like, you know, I don't sort of condone murder, but yeah, after everything that we've talked about, I think
justice was served. Yeah,
to say that this guy probably deserved
it. Holy cow, what a great story. Yeah. I love that.
No kidding.
I'm glad. Before we wrap up, ladies, if you don't mind again, plug in your show, where people can find you, where people can follow you, where people can find your merch store and all that good stuff.
So the best place, well, we're on all podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify. You can watch the full episodes on YouTube. Yep. But somethingsinisterpodcast.com will lead you to all of our social media, all of our merch, our episodes, everything.
Yep. So find us on, you know, Instagram, Facebook. Mm-hmm. We even have a TikTok. So
yeah,
we're on it all.
We're hip.
We're hip. You're all over. All over. awesome. So you can find Horror House anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter as well, at horrorhouse_pod. Also, don't forget to check out the merch store. Also, don't forget to rate and review both Horror House and Something Sinister. We don't settle for anything below 5. If we get a 4-star review, like, mafia lawyer is going to come and he's going to have a word.
You don't want to be shot in the neck, okay?
We know him, okay?
Yeah. and check out Cadence and Alexa's lovely, lovely show. It's so good. And they deserve all the love and all the 5-star reviews. So all that's left from me is to say, until next time, stay spooky. Ladies, would you like to give a little sign off as well?
Stay sinister, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.